Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home Podcast. Wherever you are on your fostering or adopting journey, we're here to provide the resources and tools you need. And I think today's guest will be a great source of encouragement to you. It's been a while. I hope everyone's had a great summer. I just got two girls settled into college. It's gone really well. We'll see when the grades come out. But other than that, kind of getting used to the change at our house, and been praying about new topics for the podcast. And one thing that's just really been on my heart is the topic of prenatal trauma. And just sometimes I find families that just are not aware and are not hadn't really done the research on what they're getting into with this. And so, Lindsay, like me, you know, I continue to meet families that believe because they adopted early that they're going to avoid, you know, any trauma. So let me introduce you first. Lindsay Martin is my sweet friend. She is an LCSW. She's a licensed clinical social worker. She's also a mom of four. And you will love following her on Instagram. You will love just kind of watching she and Zach do life together and how she pours into others. But Lindsay, give us an update on what you're doing now and how the Lord's using you in this ministry.
Sure. Thanks for having me. So right now, especially because I have a large family, four children at home, right now I'm mainly focusing on consultation. So right now working with other social workers and other counselors who are looking to be licensed. So I'm providing supervision to them, especially in the area of trauma. So my background and work is in providing trauma services, whether that is in an inpatient setting, outpatient setting, and then in a clinical practice. So that means working with families and children who have experienced trauma, specifically with families who are in adoption or in foster care, also with families on the biological side who are working towards reunification. So I've kind of worked in all those spaces in terms of working with struggling children and struggling families. And I agree. I think this is such a great topic for us to talk about today because prenatal trauma is something that does affect a lot of our children, especially those who are in adoptive homes or who are in foster homes.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, at the beginning, I kind of jumped into our topic quickly, but so many will call me and say, Lynette, we got our child from the hospital, or, you know, we've had her since she was born. And so what's going on here? We, you know, she doesn't have any trauma. And it's just such a misconception. Right?
It is. It really is. And some of the research really hasn't been done until more recently, the past 10, 12 years. So certainly if a family is starting to see behavior struggles or just problems in the home as a child is getting older, it may be a little bit of a surprise to think, oh, even though they came as an infant, that there are things that could affect them even prenatally, right?
Yes.
From the experiences of their mom. And let's definitely talk about what some of those things could be. I think the more awareness we have, the more likely a family is going to be able to seek out the right kind of supports and the right kind of services. Because once we know, we can do better and we can provide what a child needs.
That is so true. Once we know, we can do better. And I totally agree with that because I've said this for 5 years since I've been doing this podcast. I just didn't know. You know, in the beginning days, I just didn't. And so the Lord's just had to teach us so much along the way. And I'm so grateful for the forgiveness, kindness, graciousness, long-suffering of my kids because they've just been so patient with me. But, you know, understanding, like you said, taking the time to know more and care about what is going on in the mind, the deep soul of a child. I talk about the soul a lot. Well, give us the patience we need to keep connecting, right? And to keep responding in love and in mercy. And that's why it's so important, like you said, that we do talk about these things so that we're informed and we can keep digging. And the research is, you know, even at our local here at Emory, you know, the research is just the information is moving so quickly and helping so many families. And I've really seen a big change in the past 8 years. and what we know about prenatal trauma. So let's just back up and define what it is, and I'm going to let you take off with that.
Sure, absolutely. So there are a lot of causes of prenatal trauma, and some of the things that we want you to consider, especially as an adoptive home or as a foster home, are things that a child could be exposed to in utero. Mm-hmm. So some of those things you might have thought about already, which could include substance abuse. So that could be exposure to a different types of drugs.
Yeah.
That could be exposure to alcohol. And that may even happen before a expectant mom knows that they're pregnant.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So again, as we start talking about these topics, a big goal that we have is to just frame it around understanding what's going to help a child, but also keeping our hearts open and loving towards a birth family, because we are going to talk about trauma related to that loss as well for infants. And so again, thinking about substance abuse, thinking about that exposure, what that could look like. Another thing that can cause prenatal trauma is domestic violence exposure.
Oh, yeah.
So certainly if a mother is in a domestic violence situation, the child could be in danger. Obviously the mother's going to have really high levels of stress in her life. It's a very scary situation for an expectant mom. So those are some things we want to think about as well. And if we don't have a history, we don't know, then it's always just kind of good to keep that in the back of your mind, that those are things that could have happened to a child while they were in utero.
Yeah, and that's why I'm just I think it's so helpful. It's been our experience that if you can have a relationship, say it's a domestic adoption or you're doing foster care, and get to know, the birth mother, better, and what went on and how can you help. My heart's just so burdened for reunification and trying to support families, right? But to know, what was it when you're an expected mom, what was going on with you, and what was, as you build a relationship with them, that helped a lot with one of our situations, and just to know some things.
Yes, I would agree with you. And I would agree not just for the adoptive parents, but also for the adoptee.
Yes.
Especially,
oh, yeah.
When an expectant mom has chosen adoption, we really do want as much information as possible for the child to have, and relationship that is safe, relationship that is agreed upon by the expectant mom and the adoptive mom. All of those things are really vital to helping a child find their place in the world, understand where they come from, and things to help mitigate some of the loss. It won't mitigate all of the loss of that separation, which we're going to talk more about.
Yes.
But it certainly can help improve outcomes for an adoptee. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Maintaining that connection. So I am a big proponent as a clinician, having worked with families over the years and seeing the differences between situations where there's very little knowledge of the birth family for a child. And as they go through different developmental stages, what questions come up, what starts to happen in their little minds as far as trying to understand their origin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Compared to families I've worked with where there is a relationship with their family of origin, where they can have more information or even some contact, it really has been significant. I've seen significant differences in outcomes when that's available to a child. So
yeah.
I would strongly encourage that. That's my clinical opinion, certainly.
Right.
Strongly encourage whatever you can do on the front end to maintain a relationship and connection and information for the child is really vital.
Yeah, because they get older, and we've talked about this so many times on the podcast, but they want to put their pieces together.
Absolutely.
And that's such a blessing when they can do that. Even though it can be difficult information to hold, right? We do it at appropriate levels.
Absolutely.
But it can be so hard. So when a woman is carrying this beautiful new life and she experiences trauma personally, right, it affects the little one in the womb.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And as you were talking about, substance abuse is a biggie. And so is domestic violence. And I'd not thought about that one before until I started working with a family, and we realized it was the domestic violence of the expectant mother that the child couldn't even give context to, but it was pretty severe violence. And the child, of course, the child had no memory of it in the womb, right? But later was trying to deal with that and was causing the prenatal trauma.
Yes, absolutely. And so when an expectant mom experiences that high level of stress, right, we know the studies have shown us, there's a study that has come out from the National Institute of Health and actually talks about how cortisol levels that increase in the mother do travel to the placenta. And it does affect the infant's cortisol levels, which we know high levels of cortisol can create irritability, agitation. And it's not always healthy to have those high levels of stress consistently for an infant. And so, yes, unfortunately, when a mother is experiencing that, and that can also come from just the fear, right, of a pregnancy that is going to maybe potentially go towards adoption, or for different reasons, right? Just that loss for the mom as she's carrying the child, that is also going to increase the stress level of the mom. So I really want parents who are in an adoptive capacity to understand that just the separation, that sense of loss for the mom, can increase the stress for the infant while they're in utero.
So the grief begins early.
It does. It does. And while it's hard to talk about these things, and it's hard to acknowledge that this is what your little one is going to go through, we do know that we have our hope and our faith in Jesus.
That's right.
And so we talk about these things so we can be aware. And then we can talk about what are the options to help a child towards healing, right? What's available for them when they are born, and when they are in your family, what are some ways to mitigate some of those concerns, right? But it is important to be aware that it can affect them. And it, as an adoptive family, being prepared for behavioral changes or behavioral needs that may come up due to what is essentially their brain composition, right? So acknowledging that, just a mother being in a stressful pregnancy is going to potentially create the need for additional resources for the child when they are older.
Yeah, that's so well put. And it comes in seasons. I've noticed, to me, I think it hits hard in middle school. It can. And that's just scratching the surface. We could do a whole podcast on that.
Oh, yes,
but
for sure.
I know. But see, we talked about the causes of prenatal trauma. And another one, the lack of care, right?
Yes.
That I've noticed that a lot of expectant moms don't get the care that they need and deserve, while they're carrying this child. It could be extreme poverty. It could be, lack of resources as far as food and just basic things, right?
Yes, anything like that. Lack of nutrition, lack of safe housing, being exposed, like you said, to extreme poverty, not having the things that they need to care for themselves is also going to cause stress to the baby, right?
Yeah.
So we know that, and it's so unfortunate. And that's why if we do have an expectant mom, we want to do everything we can to try to help get those supports in place for them, no matter what their decision is, right?
Yes.
No matter where they are on their journey as far as deciding to parent or choosing adoption, if we can intervene at an early stage, that's going to give the very best outcome for an infant, no matter what a mother chooses.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Such a great point. We need to keep working, right?
Yes.
And then, like you said, chronic or toxic stress. We talked about domestic violence, but that could also be just being shocked that you're pregnant.
Yes.
Or an unplanned pregnancy.
Yes. And, I can personally speak to that.
Yeah.
I was a young mom and, I'm fortunate. I have a loving husband and he was a supportive partner at the time, but we were children, basically. We weren't children, but we were very young.
Yeah.
And so for us, I can totally attest to the difference between my first pregnancy that was unexpected and unplanned to now, where I've recently had my fourth much planned pregnancy, and just the difference even.
Yeah.
And this is anecdotal. Obviously, this is personal experience, but temperament differences between my oldest and my youngest, already noticing. And certainly I can look back now and say, the level of stress I was experiencing initially during my first pregnancy compared to now having the stability that I have, having many years of parenting under my belt, having the education that I'm fortunate to have, has changed how I manage my own pregnancy compared to what I didn't know. What I didn't know, and how it was going to affect my daughter early on when I was first pregnant.
Yeah.
So I think certainly I can say, again, that's anecdotal, that's personal experience, but I truly believe the research shows
absolutely.
That that is true. And so again, these things, just being aware of them as an adoptive parent or as a foster parent, even if there isn't those other pieces, right? There's not domestic violence, there's not substance abuse, certainly an unplanned pregnancy in itself is very stressful for a mother.
Yeah, it is. And when you say cortisol, you know, passes through placenta, that just sums it all up, because cortisol levels can rise, you know, in a heartbeat.
Exactly. And so we know that, you know, obviously a little bit of cortisol heightened at different times can actually be
a good thing.
Called positive stress. However, like long term, and again, pregnancy is 9 months, and if you're a mom and you're in an uncertain situation and you're unsure of what to do and you have poor supports, you're looking at 9 months of high cortisol levels, right? That's traveling. So again, being mindful of what that experience is like for an expectant mom and what that can look like for them, and having compassion for them, but also compassion for your child, because it can be hard when we start to see behaviors come out, or we start to see what we think should be typical, you know, typical development, and we're not seeing typical development in our children. And we want to say, well, you know, we're doing everything we can to be good parents and do the right thing. But really, sometimes there are these underlying needs there that are part of how the infant was affected, how your child was affected by their prenatal experience.
Yeah. Oh, so good. And so I think we all kind of get what prenatal trauma is now. It's kind of a new concept. Like you said, in the last, 10 years, for me, it's been about 7 years ago. I kind of woke up to this and began to realize things. But let's talk about the effects, the most common effects. We could talk about this for days, but the most common effects of prenatal trauma, what are some, Lindsay, that you see in your practice?
So typically when I would see families coming to me, especially post-adoption, it's going to be in that like middle elementary age. It's kind of hitting that third, fourth grade going into middle school. It's typically when, especially when children are expected to have reading, a certain reading level. That's when a lot of families start to notice, okay, maybe my child is having some learning deficits. Maybe there's some issues with reading comprehension. So in terms of brain composition or learning abilities, you start to see it coming up around that age range, and the child may start to struggle behaviorally in school due to their learning disabilities. And so you're nodding your head yes, so I'm thinking you probably have seen this either in some of your mentoring and places with other families. And the other piece of that is, especially as it gets towards middle school and you're dealing with the hormone changes, you're dealing with self-esteem issues. I've definitely seen, especially for girls, that anxiety really starts to heighten in that middle school phase for sure.
Yeah, it seems to start much earlier.
Yes.
When there's been prenatal trauma, any kind of trauma, you know, even trauma after birth, or, you know, a lot of placements when they're younger, that sort of thing.
Oh, yes. If we start to get into a child who has had multiple placements, especially in those first 3 years of life, we're looking at really dramatic changes in development potentially, because they haven't had that sustainability, right? They haven't had that continual support from a singular caregiver that they can build those bonds with. And so we see that that can definitely affect the long term. And again, we're talking about this because we want to be aware,
right?
But it doesn't mean that the brain can't change, and there is that the brain is not able to change, because the great news is that at different developmental stages, when we start to intervene and we start to apply the things that we know about trauma-informed practices, children can come to dramatic levels of healing. And so that is something that, again, we want to, as we're processing this and you're hearing it, I don't want it to feel like...
Right, we're going to get there today.
Oh, things are just going to be terrible forever. They're not.
No,
and I've seen it in a practice. Yeah. I've seen it with families that I've mentored, that that children really can reach great levels of healing. It just requires a lot of intentionality on us as the parents. And we have to do things differently than we might have done if we had parented children before. Or if it's our first time, it might look differently. Our parenting might look differently than parenting that we had. And so those are all parts of this puzzle, right? We're trying to fill in.
Absolutely. And you know, some of the other effects of prenatal trauma, like you touched on the anxiety, and I see depression.
Yes.
You know, and that tends to really develop, to me, it's more than just a quiet, withdrawn child. And as they become young adults, you know, it can really you really have to talk about it and engage it. And every family I've worked with or mentored or, you know, friends, you really have to seek help, you know, and you just have to say, here's what, you know, hun, you know, as you build that trust, here's what we're dealing with. But the depression can be a big part of this.
Yes, I would agree with you. And especially, like you said, that time frame of the young adulthood.
Yes.
And definitely when you're talking about depression and we're talking about those conflicted feelings, mm-hmm. this is where the prenatal trauma of loss comes in,
yeah.
and the separation from that family of origin.
Yeah.
It is very real. And that's why, you know, we talked already about why we should maintain contact or at least have some information that, you know, as long as it's safe, trying to have relationship so that it's not a mystery for our children, right? That they have some understanding of where they come from and that they at least know that their forever family supports and loves every part of where they came from.
Absolutely. So some of the effects we've talked about, and, you know, we kind of started with this one, but just any kind of interruption to the developmental process, right?
Yes.
Any kind of interruption. So, and, you know, you can see it, like you said earlier, in their learning capacity. You really see it begin to hit in the reading ages, you know, and just to sit still in a classroom. I mean, it just may not work, right?
Yes,
you just
correct.
May have to do different things. And attachment issues and those kind of things, to me, Lindsay, is we're always working on attachment issues, but this may not come, I hate to say come natural. But, you know, when you have a baby that, you know, when you just had your daughter and you can snuggle and hold and that's her favorite moment. That's not a lot of babies' favorite moments.
That's correct.
Right? And so that can come from prenatal trauma.
Yes.
And it can really root from that. Physical coordination. I call it the baby giraffe kind of syndrome. You know, they look like at about 3 or 4 years old. You know, they've got this bright, beautiful child. And then when they walk, they can kind of look like they're struggling with coordination a little bit.
Yes. And certainly those things you'll see can be related to substance abuse exposure.
Yes.
Substance use exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And again, when we talk about these things, we're not trying to point a finger or point blame, but we are talking about, you know, families that are really in distress or are really struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're talking about expectant moms who are struggling. They may or may not have known that they were pregnant when the substance use occurred. So again, being aware that this can happen and then knowing, you know what, if we know, then we can address the symptoms. And certainly with alcohol exposure, it's actually the first 6 weeks that is the most traumatic time. And so many people don't realize that, right? They're not knowing, even if they're recreationally drinking. So alcohol exposure early on is actually a huge factor for some of the trauma symptoms you'll see related to development. And so I think that is important to know that it's not something that you would know when the child is born, right? If
yes.
the exposure was so early, you would not see that, right, when they're born. They might not necessarily need to stay in the NICU for that type of exposure. So what appears to be, again, a healthy, fully developed newborn may have these symptoms come out later.
Yes.
That you'll be able to see.
Yeah.
And again, that could be a cause. And there are some great resources that specialize in fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, which does include substance abuse exposure outside of alcohol. So now that's kind of how they categorize it you know, the spectrum of alcohol and substance abuse or substance use during pregnancy. And also things like, you know, you could see things when a child is born, certainly that would require other interventions like a NICU stay, which again is going to add another layer, unfortunately, mm-hmm. of trauma when a child has that type of medical intervention early on. But certainly you might see things like low birth weight, things like that
mm-hmm.
Early on.
You know, and some other things that we've seen, excessive crying, high-pitched crying, when that's kind of under that NAS umbrella.
Yes.
Right? The, you know, when the child's going through withdrawals is really what we're talking about. And, you know, as an adoptive parent or a foster parent, you may not even have seen those things. It may have just happened in the NICU, right? And so you weren't aware of what the child went through with these withdrawals. You may just be seeing the end of it, which can just be like, sleep problems, slow weight gain. And another one that's it can be a stuffy nose and constant sneezing, like very common, you know, just unusual sneezing is what I've seen.
Yes. Also, you can see like enlarged adenoids, things like that, especially through the sinuses. A lot of infants will have a lot of struggle. Like you said, the congestion, those types of things can be related to substance use or substance exposure in utero. So absolutely. And like you said, if it's a foster parent who is coming in kind of after a child has entered foster care, then like you said, they may not see all of that type of withdrawal behaviors that happen, you know, unfortunately, the crying, you know, the, that hard time for an infant. But knowing that the imprint of that is still there for that child. Yeah. So if things come up later on, having as much information that you're able to have certainly is ideal when you're entering into a case like that. But certainly just focusing on what you can do now is kind of where we want to go, right? We want to think about what can we do now that we have this child, now that they're with us, what can we do to help support their healing and support them through this trauma?
Right. And I bring up all the symptoms because I think it's good for a parent to say, you know, it becomes their normal.
Mm-hmm.
In the home, like say food issues, say an infant had a feeding tube the first 3 or 4 days of life because they just didn't thrive in that area because they were going through withdrawals. So if an infant's going through withdrawals, they're not eating. That's been my experience. Mm-hmm. I've watched it. And so they've had a feeding tube. Well, now they're 4, 5, or 6 years old. They don't want to swallow meat.
Exactly.
Right? And so I bring up the symptoms, Lindsay, and just the real the details because no one else is saying it a lot of times to families that I try to help or, you know, train through this. And so much of it I've just had to learn by doing.
Yes.
But to know what they are gives me so much. I'm like, oh, well, that makes sense for you, sweetie. Like, okay, we're going to work through this together, right?
Yes. Well, and I think as parents, we can sometimes try to take ownership over our child's behavior. And we have kind of this success-failure marker for ourselves of like, well, if my child is not doing these things, then it means I'm a success, right?
Yeah.
Or if they are doing these things, it means I'm a success. And then if they're not doing these things, then I'm a failure and vice versa. So I think that, like you said, being aware that, you know, these things can be related to their history and not a personal fault of your own can help us really get to the bottom of what the needs are and how we can intervene. But it's hard. It's hard to set aside when your child is having struggles. It's hard to set aside our own feelings of failure, our own feelings of like we're not right or we're not doing enough or we're not enough for our child when really having this knowledge now and trying to understand what can happen and what a child can go through can help us be better parents in the long run. But it is hard.
Yes.
We have so much you have to kind of file through as a parent in order to do this type of healing work with children. So I think, again, being aware, I think anybody who is considering, who isn't even on the journey yet and is considering adoption or considering foster care should try to do as much knowledge seeking in this area, because again, I want all the foster parents and all the adoptive parents ready, right? I want you ready. I want you feeling as equipped as you can. But so much of it is not until you're doing it, right? Does it like, oh, it clicks. It starts to click, right?
Yes.
I remember for me, this has been my career. This is what I chose to do since I was a teenager. You know, I wanted to be a social worker. I wanted to work with children and families who'd experienced trauma. And like so many social workers I know, that's typically because you've experienced some sort of trauma yourself, right? So many people enter the field, especially clinicians, counselors, due to this kind of pass it forward, pay it forward type of model. And so, you know, my story is no different than that. But certainly, even as I worked in adoption and worked in foster care and supported families, it wasn't until we had our own placement and we did a kinship guardianship for us, did I start to really see all the things I'd been teaching play out in my home. And it is so different. So we want to be aware you can hear it and you can listen to it and we want to give you all the information. And then it's different once it actually starts happening in your home. So being prepared for that feeling of, oh, wow, this looks different. Like now that it's actually happening, right? And now that I'm the parent, I'm the one that the child needs and you might feel a little like, oh, I thought I knew what I was doing, but now I don't, right?
Every day.
Yes. And I think that is a normal, I want to say this for all the parents, right? Yes. That's a normal parent feeling no matter yep. what, trauma or no trauma, right?
Absolutely.
I think we all feel that way at different points,
oh,
right?
That's so true. So true. Such a great point. Well, thank you for discussing prenatal trauma with me today. We have, you know, we just want to be there for families when they're just, I guess, at the dumbfounded over behaviors or, you know, like, Lord, how is this supposed to look for us? You know, how do we, today's Monday, Lord, how do we get through Tuesday, mm-hmm. right? And so we just want to be an encouragement to families, and you've definitely done that today. You've spoken into that.
Well, thank you so much.
I really appreciate you joining me today on the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast, which is a ministry of Sin Relief. If you enjoyed today's episode, share it with a friend, and you can find more information and subscribe at sinrelief.org. Thanks for listening and making us a part of your adoption and foster care journey.